Hello, thanks for joining me today. This is Everett Maroon. This is my first podcast. This could be a little rusty, or a little rough around the edges. Either you found this podcast at transplantportation.com, my blog for writing and the business of writing and everything strange that happens to me, or you found this at the blog for my memoir entitled Bumbling into Body Hair, Tales of a Klutz's Sex Change. In either case, welcome. I'm going to be reading today from Chapter 1 of the memoir, so I'm just going to go ahead and get started, and I hope you enjoy it. I have had better ideas than this. I notice the sharp stench of fresh plastic in my nostrils, and it shocks me enough to take stock of my situation. From my own doing, I'm covered in a roll of cellophane, my fingers bleeding from their one-sided flirtation with the razor strip on the box, all while sweat oozes out of my temples and armpits. On the floor next to my feet is the once white disfigured bra I removed 10 minutes ago. I'm generally thinking this is a mistake. Perhaps people learn better when they're in pain anyway. I briefly consider attempting a quick education in quantum physics while my hands are still throbbing, but getting to a reference book would entail forward momentum. With my torso basically suffocating at the moment, that seems overly challenging. From their corner of the bedroom, the place where I've made this foray into futility, my two cats watch me in what is either indifference or amusement, refusing to give anything away in their expressions. Some infomercial is playing on the television in the next room because, one, it came on while I was turning myself into a modern mummy, two, I don't have satellite, and thus my programming options are limited, and three, it's nearing dinner time on a Sunday during the football off-season, and my affiliate needs all the money it can get to stay on the air. As it happens, I've already deduced that I don't need tappable lights in my closets, so I'm not inclined to run into the living room and dial madly to place my order, if I could run, that is. This is one of those moments that I just didn't foresee when I lifted my head off the pillow this morning. And it's becoming clear that trying to crush my breasts under 18 layers of cling wrap won't serve me well. Time to go for Plan B. Before I can come up with a new idea, since I haven't identified one yet, self-doubt rushes into the void, and I tell myself for the umpteenth time that this is all crazy. I might not be a feminine rose, but I'm not a man either. I pull off the plastic, thinking maybe I can use it for something else, then decide this is yet another poor decision because I don't think I'll ever really have a need for wrinkled, sweated-on plastic. In a few days, after more experiments with binding, my phone will ring and I will once again have to take a stand for myself or decide to fight another day. I have then taken the latter option so many times that now a master at 34, I have successfully deferred war for a very long time. It will eventually become clear that putting off self-respect is not an effective tactic for finding happiness, but on this day, I'm not ready for that message. 10 minutes earlier, I'd thrown caution to the wind and taken off my shirt and bra. Bras had, for me, become a minor nuisance, and I wasn't going to spend any more time or money on them than absolutely necessary. My apathy showed. They had all started looking ratty and threadbare, strips of white satin that lost its shape the moment the hooks were unsecured. I had a thing against underwires, having been stabbed by them on so many occasions that I had a callus on my left side. Why only the left side? I was never sure. Maybe it was the way I supinated my feet as I walked. Perhaps my left side was more jiggly, or the brassiere factories only did their R&D on the right wire. But the wireless bras had the habit of turning into a knotted mess that required a field manual to reorient for future use. I'd accidentally worn them out inside out more often than I'd care to acknowledge. I opened up the cellophane package, hopeful, and trying to be careful not to cut myself on the serrated edge of pain and death. Taking the lube out of the box, I attempted to find the end of the plastic. This was more difficult than it seemed, not only because all the material was transparent and thus nearly invisible to the naked eye, but because it insisted on reclinging to the roll in the 3 nanoseconds between me peeling it away and trying to get my fingers under the plastic. To start my day off with this on a regular basis seemed a smidgen more than completely insane, but I presumed I would gain some kind of expertise and it would get easier. Such a skill, however, wasn't the kind of thing that one could list on one's resume. Effective at peeling off cling wrap just seemed creepy. I held down the plastic with one hand and pulled the roll around to my back, where I attempted to switch which hand was holding the end and which was unrolling. This would have been simpler if I'd been a Hindu goddess with 6 arms. I made one full pass, slicing open a couple of fingers in the process before tossing the cardboard box altogether. Free from danger, I realized that my breasts were smashed in completely odd and uncomfortable positions, such that I looked like I had alien beings about to burst out of random spots on my chest. This seemed wrong and not the end goal of the exercise, so I fiddled a hand under the plastic and made to reorient the mounds. Apparently, breasts had minds of their own. Not a collective mind between them, but two individual sets of intentions and preferences. No sooner had I moved my right side to a mashed location that minimized its bulge than it squirted back to the middle of my chest facing the setting sun. The left side was no more cooperative. I looked at the quantity of plastic I had used attempting to smooth everything out and realized that if I couldn't reuse the wrap every day, I would quickly start running up an expensive habit, and I didn't want breast binding to be like illicit drug use destroying my finances. My skin started turning bright red from the heat, my diaphragm trapped and unhappy, stunting my lungs' expansion ability. I stood there until then grew into now. Binding doesn't seem to be worth looking like a guilty murderer who also stinks. I couldn't get the images out of my head. I'd woken up from a dream in midsummer 2003 that seemed to have a mind of its own, and obviously it had decided that inhabiting my thoughts was the way to go. I'd written down as much of it as I could remember, startled by how vivid and real everything had seemed. It went well beyond what my other notable dreams had felt like. It was tangible enough that I woke up with the smells from the narrative caught in my nostrils. I was a camp counselor making breakfast for the PTA in the off-season, somewhere in the Poconos, which right there were many more details than I typically came away with after a night's slumber. I wanted to put on paper as much as I could recall before I forgot any of it, or before I contaminated it by thinking about it too much. Soon my mind would fill in the gaps of nonsense that dreams leave in their wake, watering down the strangest parts with boring reality, so I wrote it down. I also scribbled out a picture of my face from the dream. I wasn't just a counselor, I was a male counselor, looking burly and at home in the outdoors, none of which was true in real life. I looked at the drawing, which not only didn't look like my face, of course, but also didn't look human because I wasn't an artist, but I supposed it only had to make sense to me. Although there were whole industries and 900-number services dedicated to interpreting dream imagery, I felt narcissistic thinking about it this much. And yet here I was, thinking and thinking about it. Better putting it on paper, I thought, than talking about it in a coffee house for people to hear. One clear message from the dream, obviously, was that I had spent too many summers at camp. And I did recall that camp mess hall dishwashers are a pain in the ass to figure out, although they are preferable to the alternative, which in my personal experience amounted to sitting in the freezing cold of a clearing next to the back of the mess, burning my hands off in 130-degree water, and some ammonia concoction that peeled off 4 layers of skin just to get the half-broken plastic dishes clean. Hot hands, cold ass, singed nose hair, and the stench of grease from last night's breaded meat surprise. It was a wonder that hadn't made it into the dream. There could have been some real carnage in a tale about defenseless children at camp and a massive, evil, breaded liver on a rampage. The dream was about being a man instead of a woman, and not about dishwashers, I got that much. It wasn't any more or less odd than if I were a racing turtle, I suppose. I certainly wouldn't wake up after dreaming about slowly thumping my way across a racing track and feel the need to give it much thought, so there was no need to go fretting about what this meant for my life. It was just one story my unconscious mind cooked up among many, but I spent many spare minutes of time reflecting on it and the face, and realized that the it was following me around and needed to be released somehow, or it would continue to be my unwanted, constant companion. "So I had this dream the other night," I said one day to my friend Patricia. Well, she was kind of my girlfriend, kind of my friend with benefits. From time to time, we even used the word partner. But since Patricia was cohabitating with another woman, I thought partner was a bit of an overstatement, and had said as much. "Yeah," she said, prompting me to go on, but with disinterest. "I dreamed I was a camp counselor, a male counselor." "Uh-huh," she said, intent on her Sudoku puzzle. 5 seconds elapsed. She looked up and brushed her dark bangs away from her eyes. "Wait a minute, are you saying you're transgender now?" I wasn't ready for her question. I knew she had questions about her own identity, wondering if she should go by a different name or start hormones. I hadn't thought a few steps ahead to think about how someone else would interpret my dream. No, I mean, not necessarily. I mean, I just keep thinking about it. "Jesus Christ, I knew this was going to happen." "I'm not following you," I said, though I should have predicted what came next. "I just knew this would happen. You're all insistent. No, I'm a butch." And then wham, it's all, "I lied, I'm a guy." You know I have my own gender shit. Why are you doing this to me? Finished, she waited for me to speak. It's just a dream. I'm not saying it means anything. I was wondering what you thought about it, but if you don't want to hear about it, forget it. I'm just saying, she went on, frowning at the puzzle as a proxy for her feelings about me, that you've told me you're a butch. If you want to go back on that in your community, I think that's fucked up. I didn't ask why she got to split from the butch community with impunity, because I didn't recognize the similarity until later. I didn't sign a butch contract, Patricia, I said, getting tense. It was just a freaking dream. And with that, I decided not to talk to her anymore about the transgender thing. It hadn't even been a real experience. Resigning myself not to discuss the issue did not mean, however, that the issue went away. I looked differently at my face in the mirror. It was a woman's face, clearly, with an angled chin, feminine brow, and full girly lips. That was the end of it, though. Since 1992, I had sported a shortcut, first in an attempt to look like Katie Lang, and later a simple short on the sides, longer on the top look that I deluded myself into calling my own. All the staring was obsessive, I knew, but I couldn't stop myself from imagining how my jaw might look more squared if I had a goatee or if I had bigger hands. Reality did present itself. Knowing how my Lebanese father looked as an adult, I was probably resigned to a life of unabated hairiness with a nose the size of Alabama. In fact, it wasn't just the men in my family to have big schnozzes. My Aunt Marie had such a big nostril she could have picked her nose with two fingers at a time. Perhaps it was only a matter of time before I could dock ships in my face. Big nose, blocky jaw, fuzzy eyebrows, male pattern baldness, this didn't sound like the way toward everlasting beauty. Camp counselor dream aside, what was it I wanted? It would take a while to answer that question. First, I wanted to investigate why anyone else would go through this and turn their world upside down. It would have to wait, though, as life was busy and the big dyke march in D.C. was around the corner.